Welcome back to A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Brzezinski, get to sit down with interesting people from interesting sectors of the business world. We get to pick apart how they work, what motivates them, and some of the foibles that they face. Today with me is Amanda May. Amanda, would you introduce yourself, where you're from, and what you do?
Sure. My name is Amanda May, and I'm the Executive Director at the Linden Heritage Museum.
All right. So, Amanda, today, this episode is really all about you.
Oh.
Yeah. I want to pick apart how, and more importantly, why someone gets into your field. So, real quickly, how did you get involved in the Linden Heritage Museum?
So, back in 2018, I was asked to help reorganize the museum's financial statements. Basically, it was like old systems merging with new systems, and that's what my background is. So, can I come help? Great. Became their treasurer. Did that for them for 4 or 5 years. And while I was on the board, continued life, did my other business consulting, worked with some other companies, and the director at the time decided to retire at the end of 2021. And at the time, it was right after COVID, the industry that I was currently working in was kind of in an upheaval. And so I basically made a proposition that I would come in, take over the director role, and basically revamp the museum as a whole. So processes, programs, risk assessments, financials, strategic development, brand marketing, all the things. And it literally happened as quick as that.
Fast process.
Yes. Yes. Well, when he retired, he wanted to leave. He wanted to kind of like continue the process of leaving rather quickly, which was fine. So we kind of all just needed to move things along fairly. But I mean, in the short of it, that's how I ended up there.
So your background then, you talked about a little bit, a lot of planning from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific education in that or?
Business administration and business management and a lot of hands-on experience. I grew up with a dad who was entrepreneurial. Ran his own businesses. Entrepreneurial. I can never say that word. Anyway, you guys all know what I'm talking about. But and he was successful. Had his failures, but he was always of the mind that we were along for the ride. So I always got to be taught business lessons and what not to do, and got to listen to how he handled customers and hear him on the phone. And we would do, you know, things growing up. And then I started school and started working with smaller companies. And I've done everything from bookkeeping to HR to payroll to AR and finances. And then I did business development, and I realized that I had a knack for being efficient with systems and how systems run our companies. And how do you become a better company? By understanding what your system does for you and how the systems and the processes and the procedures that your team uses are also equally as important as what you use, and how basically it all works together in tandem.
All right. So, like, did you go to university for any of this, or was this really just homegrown skills?
Both. So a little bit of both. And they kind of equally played their part. And also because I'm a creative person, I have also a weird background that allows me to understand the artistic ability, which comes from, you know, the marketing and understanding, like when we go in and talk about marketing and branding and what you want to see, I specifically want to be creative about that process and how it represents the company that you're working with and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like this whole package thing, but not everybody I work with or the schooling that I've done, it's been learning pieces. So pieces of how it all works together. And then when I go and work with companies, I pull out the piece that they need to develop it.
It is oddly fitting for the direct position of director then, because we've talked about this in the past where directors kind of just do what they need done.
Right.
And you're able to come in with such an eclectic set of skills.
Yes.
So, like, on that note then, so what are perhaps the most important qualities that a director of a non-for-profit should have?
Flexibility. It is the ability to not necessarily be able to do all, but know of all. So there are, on my level, I can do pretty much all of it. But let's say I wanted to get into more into social media. I know what I want to do, but I shouldn't be doing that.
Mm.
Not necessarily from a delegation standpoint, but from an experience standpoint. Could I do it? I could. Should I? No. I think I should find a way for somebody else who does it better to take care of it.
Right.
So it's that kind of a thing.
Okay. It really is just about finding the right people to surround yourself with then.
That and having a very clear understanding of what you do well and knowing you can back it up if you need to. I've had many, many times where I have 100% had to stand my ground and defend myself. Not because they were intentionally trying to come after me, but for anything, but because when you're responsible for people and places and large sums of money, you get asked questions that kind of come at you like they're questionable.
Right.
And when you understand what you're good at and you know exactly how it works, how it operates, how you got there, how you would do it again, would you do it again? You have to be able to take people down that road and emphatically say, this is the way that it's going to be done. And this is the way I'm going to do it. And be okay with that. But also understand that if you're taking care of something that's not your strong point, actually being willing to say, I don't think that I did this wrong, but I could have done it differently.
Sure. So, like, to that point then, what do you think is the difference between good directors and the great directors?
Being able to allow change, probably. We all know that any business, any organization cannot stay the same forever. And for the most part, when you're stuck in a role, not stuck, sorry, that was the wrong choice of words. When you're in a role for any length of given time, you're mind generally becomes stagnant unless you do other things to incorporate change. You go to conferences, you take more classes, you do some sort of learning or educational opportunity that allows you as a person to grow. The change happens when, if you don't have the ability to do those things, that you surround yourself with the people that encourage change to happen in some area. So if I'm just selling you a phone, but this phone changes, but I no longer know anything about the phone and how it operates and how it works. Well, you want nothing to do with the phone because I can't explain it to you. And everything in the world changes with the, in that aspect, no matter what you're doing. The museum changes purely because the museum itself isn't changing, but the audience I'm talking to is. So if I can't do it in reverse.
So inversely, then, what qualities should a director not have?
Antisocial, probably. It's not a good thing. Being a director means you're the face of whatever it is that you're represented. So I'm the face of the museum, whether I like it or not. And that means that I engage with people and I, you know, make sure that I enjoy talking to them and I get out and I talk to groups and I talk to partner and I have partnerships with people and I bring people in and I encourage involvement and I, you know, and I, my gosh, encourage my staff to be involved and I, you know, engage with them. Like I put work and effort into the people that are around me because I would like them to do the same with the thing that I'm being.
But hypothetically, can't I take the hypersocial aspects and delegate that out to someone else?
Do you expect, if you're delegating, that means you're taking your core and you're giving them different things, right? Because they're not all going to do the same thing. Do you expect them to be able to be accurate representatives of your business if they only know part of the picture.
Mm.
It just doesn't work. They can get a lot and they can be a great representative in the aspect that they're working on and they can have a lot of information. But when it truly comes down to the really important conversations as a business, when you grow, you have to be the one representing it.
Mm.
I can train somebody, and if they're there long enough, they can work into that role. But let's face it, it's just not normal.
Right.
So the expectation that that's going to occur can be there, but you better have a 5-year vision attached to that.
Because that's how long it's going to take for someone to reasonably become that familiar.
Yeah. If I told the people, like the newest employee that we have at the museum, if I tried to inundate her with all of the things that I deal with throughout the month, every month, I asked her at the end of that month to go talk to people about it, there would be, not only would it not be accurate, but most likely it would be wrong. Not because she wants to be wrong, but if she's forcing herself try to fill a gap with stuff that she isn't there with yet, now she's inaccurately representing what it is that you're working on.
So then leading further into just the role of director itself, you've been at the Linden Heritage Museum for 2 years now.
No.
Are we going on to 3?
2020? Well, since 2018, technically, but as a director, 2022, 2023, so at least 3. Going on 4.
Going on 4. All yeah. Right. So in those 4 years, you've been able to do a lot. Mm-hmm. I would think it's fair to say that you've been a successful director.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah. What do you think has been your key to success at the museum?
Drive.
Mm.
Maybe a little bit of forcefulness. Unwillingness to give in on thinking that an idea seems out of maybe a traditional box that we were put in.
Mm.
And then also gaining the excitement about the change for the people that I want to participate in the change with me.
Mm.
So when you start out with new ideas, depending on who you're talking to, they're usually like, whoa, like you've taken it too far. Like, I can't see it. I don't see how it's possible. There's just no way. And you're going like, okay, well, give me a moment. Let me get you some more information. And the drivenness to just make sure that I'm going to get 5 no's before all of a sudden they're like, oh, I get it now. Like, we've been talking about this for 6 months. Didn't understand it until like right this second.
Right.
So it's the constant flow of talking points and information. And
do you think you have a particular moment in your 4 years of working there that really epitomizes that drive?
I would say not necessarily a moment, but I would say a moment once a year.
Mm.
So at the end of every year, I go through like a summary of everything that we've accomplished. But I start by saying, here's what I wanted to do at the beginning of the year. Here's what we actually did.
Mm.
What's the term where you understate but overdeliver?
Oh.
I don't do that with purpose, but I have a practical representation knowing that if I can get them 75% of the way, I can actually get another 50% out of it, because just getting them through the planning part is everybody's biggest hang up. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of thinking. And sometimes it's a lot of talking. And if you're not on the same page, it's really hard.
Right.
To communicate. So every year we go through summary of the year and we go through lists. And I said, here's what our budget was. Here's how much extra we brought in. Here's how much we spent. Here's how much we still have in savings. It's a very good representation of really what we accomplished. Then I have a list of every event, how many people came in. And it gives us a very clear indication of actually how much we accomplished during the year. And if you went and asked any of those people, if they thought that we would get to that point at the end of 3 years after the first year, I guarantee you none of them would agree with you. They wouldn't. There's no way.
So it's been good growth then.
Yeah. And it's buildable. So the expectation is I'm not expecting out of year three what we did in year one. Year one, year two, year three, each year has a purpose. Each year you build on whatever you previously did. But the goal making is important because you got to get there so that you can get through the next year.
Right. So let's talk about the person who's maybe looking at not-for-profits.
Yeah.
They're not keen for the corporate world.
No.
They really just love the heart of giving to the community in a charitable way. How would someone best walk out the path to not-for-profit director? Is it that they start as a volunteer and they just work their way up? Do they go to school? Do they go to the private sector to cut their teeth a little bit before coming in?
Yeah. Are you talking about like they're right out of high school?
Sure.
So any educational classes, whether you're going to go get your associates or maybe you go for a business degree, needs to have foundational context. Basic accounting. Basic a creative writing or something, because you're going to do a lot of papers. You're going to talk with a lot of people on paper. Basic business management, because it does not matter if you're a great person. If you cannot run it well, your people will not be successful. It's just how it works. You look at really successful businesses, and if they can't manage what they have, well, they won't have anything to manage. So you don't need a 4-year degree, but it also depends on what industry you're in. Classes, courses, there's so many opportunities out there for technical, like BTC, or online courses in specific subjects, or you can kind of pick and choose. But if you can learn from educational classes, do as many as you can. Make sure that you're comfortable talking to people about whatever it is that you're about. And you have to be in it and invested so far that you're willing to do anything to succeed reasonably.
So, to use a word that I usually hate, there is still a hustle to it, though.
Oh, absolutely. Especially in the nonprofit world. Because when I think we talked about this, you need to be willing to clean the bathrooms, to take care of your front desk, to do a tour. Like, I'm obviously talking about museums, but depending on what you're in, you need to be willing to step in to do anything, because there's no waiting around for anybody else to do it. Most likely you're in the smaller side of the business world where you don't have a lot of extra people. And you can work your way up to bigger nonprofits. There are huge nonprofits. There's foundations, you know, and obviously that they change very drastically, but you know, it's very specific to what you're looking for. There's lots of availability. People will welcome you with open arms in nonprofit world if you want to be involved, but you got to make sure you know what you're going after.
Can you explore for us the difference between profit and not-for-profit, just as it is, whether it's leading, working them? What are some of the biggest differences?
Not a nonprofit usually has a tax deductible aspect to its foundational conditions. Okay. We take in a lot of donations. People give us when we do fundraising, the mission that we're involved with, the participation in giving back, is usually part of the nonprofit world. When you go into normal business, you're talking about a whole other set of tax defining revenue. So a lot of our nonprofit stuff is based on our programming, memberships, donations, fundraisers. Businesses are usually selling their service or their products. So the two are not speaking. Basically, they're talking two different languages.
Mm.
Money driven. Nonprofits can still make good money, but it's just in a different capacity.
Mm. Do you think the atmosphere between the two is different?
I think people make them different.
Mm.
They assume that nonprofits are hard up for cash and maybe not completely efficient with their budgets. When, in my opinion, from what I've seen, especially locally, that is not the case. They are on it. They are as efficient as possible so that they can make their dollar go further. Because ultimately, especially around here, we want our money to go back into the community.
Mm-hmm.
We do need it to survive. So we need to pay our employees. We need to pay business expenses. We might need to buy new equipment. We might need to do very essential things. But ultimately, our foundational of doing those things is to make money so that all the additional money can be put back into the people that we participate with locally.
I know Linden specifically has got a very prominent Dutch population. I think that's kind of infected everyone else who's ever come in here.
In more ways than one. We have board members, so I feel like I can say this, where they always joke about, you know, them being willing to actually spend the money. And there's, you know, some joke that, you know, they're too frugal and they, but that's not really what my experience is when I hear true Dutchmen talk about it. It's that they want to be purposeful.
Mm.
They want their money to be purposeful. They don't want to be frugal or mindless about, they're just throwing money out the window. They want it to be purposeful and impactful and to make sure that it does what it should be doing. It's not just mindlessly sitting there to do things that are not good.
They're not doing it strictly for the tax write-off.
That too. But I know some of the most generous people have been people of Dutch heritage that have been gracious enough to give to the museum. And some ask for a lot of information about where we are and how we're doing. Some ask for that to be put to specific projects. And some know us well enough that they trust us and know that we're going to be putting it to good use. And it's just part of the transparency thing.
Yeah. No, and if someone's hesitant, I shouldn't say hesitant, if someone's kind of guarding that information, that's just a bad sign in the first place.
Yeah. Guarding, it could be a bad sign that they're hiding something, or it could be almost a bad sign that though that there may be, what's the term? Not pleased with their progress, even.
Oh, sure. A little self-conscious.
Self-conscious that they're not doing as well as they should be.
Mm.
So it could be multiple things.
Yeah. It's just some of the personal sides of business, I guess.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So last question then, and then we'll close out here. What advice would you give to someone who's looking to get into nonprofits and maybe they're eyeing up the position of director one day?
Mm.
What would you tell them?
Hard knocks. There are so many things that I would not have learned in a classroom. Mm. I did it by practical, hands-on job experience. And it was choosing to take my jobs growing up in ways that built on everything that I learned prior, schooling or otherwise. So if I worked in a retail job, I didn't work in a retail job again. I went and took whatever experience I had from that retail job, and maybe I went and worked in an office job.
Mm.
Worked in an office job. Now I'm going to see if I can go get administrative experience in the HR department. Okay, I did that. So building on that, I think, was the one most important thing that I ever did in going through school, going through my jobs, growing, even after we started a family. It didn't matter. I chose to build on all my practical experience, making sure that whatever I was working on, I was bringing out something new with me, because otherwise I would not have all the experience and all the different roles that I have now without doing that.
Always learning.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, Amanda May, thank you for sitting down with me for a fourth time. It's been fun.
Yes. Great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, where can people find you if they're interested in you or the museum?
My information is on the museum website if you want to get a hold of me through phone or email, or you can just stop by the museum and say hi.
There we go. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode, that you've learned something valuable, and that you would come back for our next recording. Until then, take care and be well. Bye-bye.